Are food prices to blame for Egyptian demonstrations?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. Today, protest organizers in Egypt say they hope to draw 1 million people to central Cairo to demonstrate against the government of Hosni Mubarak. They're unhappy with the country's high unemployment and high food prices. In fact, today, U.S. food trader Cargill said it's seeing buying and stockpiling of food commodities in the region. Abdelreza Abbasian is senior economist at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, and he's with us now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Without the high food prices, would these protests be going on?
When food prices increase, you're bound to be pouring fuel on the fire. Egypt, for example, prices of basic food have gone up 20% to 30%. However, these countries also happen to have quite a strong subsidy program where they target most vulnerable and try to keep prices for that segment of the society rather stable. So that shouldn't have a spark, big problem or discontent among that section of society.
Is that one way the country's government has remained stable for such a long time?
Food is an important element in this equation, but it is certainly not the only reason. The sparks like what we have seen in recent weeks have been rather unexpected, and the reasons for them, I think, are very complex. They can certainly not be only one or two factors.
If there is a change in the Mubarak government there, and if the subsidy program goes away, what kind of problems are we talking about in Egypt?
I would be very doubtful that there would be any fundamental changes in the short run over the subsidy program. Simply too many people depend on it. It is strategic national security. Therefore, whoever is in charge would have to continue this program. And I think without it, we could only see more agitation in Egypt.
Abdelreza Abbasian, senior economist at FAO. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The British oil giant BP reported its first yearly loss in almost two decades. The company lost around $5 billion in 2010 because it set aside $40 billion for cleanup and compensation for the Gulf oil spill. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
BP is raising some of the cash to cover the cost of the Gulf of Mexico spill by slimming down and selling assets. Two of its big U.S. oil refineries are on the block. One of them is the Texas City refinery, scene of an earlier disaster which cost the lives of 15 workers. The sale is a fundraising measure, but David Battersby, oil analyst with stockbrokers Redmayne Bentley, says the sale also marks a shift in BP's strategy.
I think it's a move away from the United States, where they were pilloried so badly, moving away from refining and more into exploration and development, in particular with the Russians.
BP recently struck a $10 billion deal to drill for oil and gas in the Russian Arctic. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are higher at the moment, about 1%. Chrysler reported a much smaller loss in its latest quarter. The automaker said it's close to making a profit, as a matter of fact. That would be the first time it's done that since filing for bankruptcy in 2009. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow tacked on 68 points to close at 11,891.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, helping small businesses and nonprofits make sense of social media. You can learn more at constantcontact.com/social media. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at chevyvolt.com. And by Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at microsoft.com/cloud.
So it costs more than a penny to make and distribute a penny. Still, congressional efforts to scrap the one-cent coin have failed so far. Canada has tackled the same issue for years, and now the Canadian Senate Finance Committee may scrap their coins. Marketplace's Sean Cole explains.
After extensive hearings over the last year and a lofty statement from Deputy Chairman Irving Gerstein,
many scholars and commentators have suggested that the penny is in fact a piece of currency that lacks currency.
The Canadian Senate Finance Committee finally released a report saying the penny should be called in. The majority of Canadians are sick of it. It's cumbersome, and it costs a penny and a half to get one into my hand. Still, the Mint makes half a billion of them a year.
We have 20 billion pennies in circulation,
which, laid end to end, would stretch
more than 9.5 times around the equator.
So, let's stop minting pennies, stop circulating them a year later, and then 2 years later, retailers would stop accepting them. That's the gist of the report. You could still redeem them at the Bank of Canada forever.
I see them on the ground. I'll pick up a penny.
You will?
I will.
How ironic.
Senator Joseph Day is chairman of the Finance Committee.
It's still legal tender.
Until you're done with it.
I asked him what happens to all of the pennies after everyone cashes them in.
The banks send them back to the Mint, and the Mint will melt them down again and sell that metal off.
Sell it back to America so that they can make American pennies out of it.
I think America's not far behind Canada.
Dude, I don't know about that.
Yes, I called a Canadian senator dude. Because America's been rolling out four new designs of the Lincoln penny for Honest Abe's 2009 bicentennial.
The Royal Canadian Mint hasn't done that with the Canadian coin. We have seen 90 years of the same design.
Steve Woodland is with the Royal Canadian Numismatic Association. Numismatics?
The study of the art and science of money.
He testified before the committee last year, saying he hopes the Mint will still make a bunch of one-cent coins every year to sell to collectors.
If they don't do that, it's not the end of the world. There will be something else to collect. You switch from the one-cent coin to the five-cent coin to whatever.
But all of this is assuming Canada's finance minister puts the report into practice. His office would only say he's still reviewing it. In Toronto, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
And finally, from pennies to potatoes. Invasive air potatoes are a big problem in Florida. The big thorny vines that grow spud-like vegetation threaten native trees. The state used to shell out a lot of money for professionals to get rid of them, but budget cuts mashed a lot of those efforts. So last weekend, thousands of volunteers got together in forests around Gainesville to weed them out. The 12th annual Great Air Potato Roundup brought college students and Cub Scouts alike to attack the killer potatoes. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
How much soy does it take to build the inside of a car?
So Ford is currently saving about 3 million pounds of petroleum each and every year by using soy instead of petroleum.
I'm Bob Moon. Cup holders and car seats get a green makeover next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.